lives now.
Capital 263.
Welcome to Politics and Beyond on Capital 263. My name is Christopher Farai Charamba.
And I'm Tawanda Henry Miti. And yeah, welcome to the best political podcast in the country, the region, and I suppose SADC, AU, and EU even, seeing as there was a Brexit.
I feel like someone's hating on our podcast. Like Zesa tried to do us beans the other day. We were really
Because we're clearly agents of regime change. So
please, Shamarin, DC agent of regime change. Please. You might
ask, why is regime change? Why is regime change such a negative
word? You know, DC agent of regime change.
we had a few setbacks with the electric supply authority of Zimbabwe and failing to back up our work, so unfortunately we've missed another week, but not to fear, we're here.
And
we've got quite a bit to talk about, and just catch everyone up on the current going ons in Zimbabwe, and ZANU-PF and MDC coalition, and some interesting things.
And have a bit of a rant. I feel like you'll have a bit of a rant today. You've been angry this week. I don't know what's going on with you, but calling people apes just there in the group.
Talking
nonsense.
Can I actually explain that that tweet? For all those that don't follow me, selfish plug here. My Twitter handle is at Henry Beatty, but I tweeted the editor of the Herald, Caesar Zvai, and I said that he apes have more wit. And I think the reference went over a couple of people's head, because if you've watched the movie Planet of the Apes, the lead ape in that is called Caesar as well. So that's why I said apes have more wit.
That's where you were taking it.
Yeah, so my insults have depth to them.
What's happening over there in Australia, bro? I think you need to come back to the motherland and just, you know, reset. Eh?
Reset. No, I'm just an angry soul. I'm comfortable in diaspora, and the more things work, the more angry I get about back home.
Really?
But I will be back. I'll be back quite soon, actually. So don't worry. We'll be in the studio together. And,
I don't think it's a problem to bring in currency. I think when you want to live with it, ndopa tichakunetsa ipapo.
I'm going to donate it to America or Farosisa nyama.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine by me. Saga, when you arrive, everyone who's listening, when Henry gets here, I'll let you know the date. Ndia rutenga. It's on record.
we should probably have a live or an interactive session or some sort of discussion or gathering. I'm sure a lot of people would be okay or up to that. I mean, let us know. To those who are listening, to those on the group, if you would be up to having a situation where we perhaps have a recorded podcast with questions and whatnot, because it might be fun to actually meet some of the people that we interact with who listen to the podcast.
Some of the people in the group. Shout out to everyone who is there and contributes and all of that. And I agree. So when you're around, actually, let's plan something, a Politics and Beyond soiree.
Indaba. Speaking of Chatfest, we can maybe begin by Professor Moyo's utterances at SAPES trust this week. I think that's something that's been going on in the headlines or quite on everyone's tongue at the moment. I don't know if you went there. Were you there? Yeah?
No, I wasn't there. So I was supposed to go, but sometimes when you work for the man dictates where you are supposed to be. So unfortunately, okay. I couldn't make it there. I think it was a good thing in hindsight. The crowd that was there was largely of a particular faction. Saka, you don't want to be captured, and then you know the headlines will say politics and beyond. Politics and beyond is aligned to the G40 faction when it is.
But yeah, I guess for those that don't know, Professor Moyo was at Surface Trust, which is run by Ibo Mandaza, who is quite well renowned as a political analyst and intellectual and academic of sorts. And he allowed Professor Moyo to give a lecture on. Essentially the lecture was titled The Nationalist Agenda, Nationalist Agenda.
But, with the Zimbabwe's Nationalist Project, that was the title.
That was the full title. Thanks for the correction there. But essentially, as Alex Magaisa points out, it was a successionist lecture. Some tidbits that he dropped in there that have had... tongues wagging to write like a Herald reporter and tongues wagging and people speaking. I think where to even begin. The outline of the lecture, from my understanding, it was 2 hours long. He really did begin by speaking about nationalist politics and the nationalist project in Zimbabwe in terms of a historical look at nationalism and what he believes is needed in ZANU. That was essentially the first half of the lecture. Then the second half of the lecture began the attack on Lacoste, which he called out by name.
On the Honorable Vice President Emmerson Dambudzo Mnangagwa. Carry on.
So he began by saying that Lacoste itself presents, and I quote, a clear and present danger to the nationalist project. He had already aligned the nationalist project as ZANU-PF and the country in itself. So, it was quite a no holds bar, I suppose, attack on this. And... this narrative gets really interesting because while ED or the vice president has been seen as the leader of Lacoste, G40 has been missing a viable candidate leader, one who is of the same stature in the party in terms of liberation credentials, in terms of seniority, in terms of, unreproachability in the matrix of ZANU-PF politics. And Professor Moyo gave us this option by speaking of the Minister of Defence, Sydney Segaramai, as a counterpoint or as a converse example against the arrogance of ED and his sense of entitlement. He said that Segaramai has humility, and it's his humility and accommodating nature that makes him a true nationalist. The professor said he's grounded, and he will shower Segaramai with praise. So all of a sudden, G40 has picked their presidential candidate or their host to replace Mugabe in the successionist policy or project of theirs.
Well, that's a good summary of what happened. It's an interesting one, though. You're right. It was actually the Stephen Chan. I think he wrote article or he's also another political analyst or scholar based in the UK, Professor Stephen Chan, and he wrote an article or he gave us a talk where he basically said that on the one hand, Team Lacoste has a clear leader, on the other hand, G40 doesn't. And it's true. If you look at what Vice President Mnangagwa has been doing, he's good books with the Chinese, his good books with he's on speaking terms with the British. They seem to like him as far as, you know, things are concerned. But on the G40 side, they have no one. So if external forces ask, you know, they can't point to someone who will lead. If internal forces ask, no one can point to a leader. And that's also something that Prof. Moyo said, you know, that this guy has also been cozying up to my external forces and the West and all sorts of things in reference to Vice President Mnangagwa. But now it's interesting that Sekeramai's name is brought forward. Yes, in terms of stature, you can say they've been in the party the longest. They are actually the Sekeramai, Mugabe, and Mnangagwa, the last three remaining individuals who were in the first cabinet in 1980. And interestingly enough, all of them have held the position of Minister of Defense at some point in their careers. So he has the credentials and the stature. What I don't think he has is the gall to actually be the leader of G40. I think it can be one of two things. It can be a let's upset the apple cart and just, you know, throw a spanner in the works, or let's use this as a decoy. So everyone now is focused or tries to create a situation between Sekeramai and Mnangagwa, and then it weakens the position of Lacoste, perhaps. Or, and then we set up our G40 side, we restructure, and then we get our house in order so that we can end up with whoever it is we actually want at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think, it's one of those, there's so many moving parts, and you know, Professor Moyo, as far as I'm concerned, is you know, second to very few in terms of political shrewdness and ruthlessness. I think he enjoys the game, and you know, your take on it is quite right. And you know, people have already been pointing out that a lot of the conversation has now gotten, is he even senior, what are his credentials and everything like that, but no one has really even asked him his opinion, as far as I understand.
Well, he's quoted in the Sunday Mail today as saying, leave me out of these things. Why are you trying to drag me into it? Keep me out of these issues. And as far as I know, Sekeramai, this is the approach that I think he was going to take anyway. Whether the reply, I think it might have been solicited or he gave it willingly, but he doesn't strike me as an individual who's out to lead a faction that is G40. I mean, that's a very volatile place to be. For one, you're not actually in control. Two, with the attack that's been happening on Kasukuere over the past few months, it's not a safe place to be. And then the third thing is, in 2014, Sekeramai was actually linked to Maimjuru, and
so he was already in trouble.
Yeah. So for those factional issues, and he survived. And in his wife was made to cry by ZANU-PF youths at the party headquarters. They said, Muruto Zwonasa, first lady. Oops. And they heckled her and they insulted her until she left in tears, literally. So this is not a man, I think, who is looking at a situation and saying, you know what, let me put myself back into this situation again. Even his wife is probably thinking, Sha Blazka, look, listen, we've been through this before, we've survived, let's not push our luck. So I really don't see him. I think, you know, Professor, he plays a very smart political game, but I don't think, you know, this is something that Sekeramai himself has advanced for.
Yeah, and I mean, look, it's the same thing I was saying about the vice president years and years ago. Is, you know, if I was at Sekerima's age and stature and wealth, being president is the last thing that I would want. I mean, as far as I understand, his children, his family is off of the sanctions list, the targeted sanctions list. His family, his kids can travel where they want. He's quite well off. He's quite wealthy. Why would you want to get yourself involved in a fight for the president when you're the Minister of Defense and you have run the land anyway? All of a sudden, like, what does it benefit you? What does it benefit him personally to be in a situation like that? You know, unless he thinks that he doesn't, like I was saying, I don't know much about him, but you're right. He doesn't strike me as someone that has an unbridled appetite for power, like maybe, you know, a crocodile would.
Yeah, so I mean, I don't know. But to be fair, it's a smart play on the G40 side, because also, as you said, he's Minister of Defense, which means he has sway over the defense forces, and that side has already been said to be Team Lacoste. So now, if they are, you know, if their boss literally is on the one side, whose side do you go to? It's quite interesting, but I really don't think that it'll work out. Another one that he mentioned also, saying is senior in ZANU-PF or might be senior, is Vice President Mpoko. So, you know, if old Sydney decides Kuti he's not interested, then, you know, they can shift the attention to Vice President Mpoko, which if G40 goes that route.
They're dead, and not even because of the tribal reason, because Mpoko is probably, with all due respect, one of the most inept human beings I've ever had the misfortune of looking into. He's quite...
Did you see the report in the paper?
Today's?
No, I think it was last week or something that said Vice President Mpoko was set to meet President Putin in Russia.
I didn't read that.
I don't know who planted that story, but then it was quickly retracted because he's gone to, I don't know, he went to some fair of some trade fair of sorts. I don't know what it's about.
Oh, right.
But you know, someone tried to spin it as if it was an official visit
No, of course not. He's probably going to buy my point of sale machines for chopping.
Shame on you. Anyway, let me not say let me not say things about Vice President Mpoko. He still remains our Vice President, even though he's a man lives like it's the Wild Wild West, bruh. Like, he literally storms police stations and plucks his guys out. You know, if I was him, to be fair, and you want your guys out of jail, you call Chiwuri and you just say, "Sha, what Chiwuri? Nene boys zangu zamasunga. You know, let's get them out."
Chris, you have to assume that Chiwuri respects you. Chiwuri will feel his cause, man. Chiwuri will be like, I honestly believe that I've not seen a picture of him awake, fully awake. He always looks like he's sleeping. If anyone who is a political analyst was from the outside is looking at us discussing, you know, Vice President Mpoko like this, it's very easy to make the conclusion that it's perhaps tribal or it's based on regional politics. But honestly, it doesn't. It honestly is not even about that. It's really just his own ineptitude. I don't think that it would be fair to say that people write him off purely because of. I think he was the safe choice. I think if Simon Kayamwe had been chosen ahead of him, he actually has more sway and he's more capable. In that position. I think that's why they chose him ahead of SK Moore.
Man, I think they experimented and it was just a bad experiment. Like, of course, they didn't want to go the SK route, but then they didn't have many other options, perhaps. And then, you know, there was also Sandy Moya as well. But, you know, that I think also then, in terms of the politics of ZANU-PF, would have been a whole other situation. So they experimented, and it was a bad one. Every time the president leaves the country and he's made acting president, my heart literally skips many beats. I fear what would happen if something happened to His Excellency on a trip and this guy's left acting because
that is the one time where I can agree that it would be preferable to have Mugabe remain
as president. let's move on. So it's interesting to see what will happen between with this new factional issue, Sekeramai's name being thrown in, and we'll see what happens there. But I really don't think that it's going to go anywhere. I think this one is going to blow back in Professor's face. Kasukwere is under pressure right now, and I think that's also another reason why they've been forced to look for someone else, because really, that one, yesh. Yeah, G40 is under pressure, but
I think though all these things are really gonna come to it. Primary elections begin, and anything that happens before primary elections is really just us speculating on things that don't matter. So if say there's still in of ZANU, he's still the commissar, which apparently is one of the most more powerful positions in the actual party itself. During primary elections, then you could almost call that a win for G40, and nothing else really matters, because unlike some of the older members of the party, they have time on their hands. So 2023 is not that far away for Xavier or for Jonathan, because these guys are
Jonathan is in his 60s.
Yeah, but he's not 80, guys. He's not old. Is he Jonathan in his 60s?
Yeah, he must be.
I thought he was in his late 50s.
I wouldn't even be surprised if he's 65.
Hey. Yeah, no.
The thing is, you get fooled by the fact that he's 60. Turned 60 this year. Yeah. So we get fooled by the fact G40, this guy is 60 years old.
So G40 should really be G60, because I think Xavier's
45, isn't he?
Yeah, he's 46.
Yeah.
I'm sure people who listen to this and we speak about Xavier and Jonathan like they're our friends.
Anyway, speaking about Jonathan, also he wasn't at the rally in Marondera. So ZANU-PF has started campaigning. The youth met with their president in Marondera. Mashistka.
Yeah.
So it was organized by the Youth League. I'm not sure how many people, we struggle with figures in this country. Some people will tell you 150,000 people showed up, but there's no one to actually give us accurate data. Let me ask.
No, Aldo. That's
hold. Aldo, how many people were in Marondera? Yeah. More than 50,000, says LJ. He was there.
LJ, I'm 150,000 people who watch you in his life.
And then Henry, I'm 150,000 people who watch you in your life. And Muswe Friday, Nepa 1 million men match. Anyway, but there were a lot of people there. One of the individuals who wasn't there was Prof Moy. I don't know why. Honorable Kasukwere was there. Chipanga was leading the show, and for those who caught it on TV or caught the tweets, he called our president an angel. He said that even if the president died,
they would have Politburo
at Heroes Acre, because no one else's name is worthy to be on the ballot.
He said Mugabe is president for life. Yes. And if he dies, they would have police bureau at Heroes Acre.
Yes.
if you're president for life, when you die, do you not stop being president?
He's president in life and in death.
Death. Okay, that I guess that's what he meant to say. I think. Yes. So you know, there were lots of statements like that, bootlicking and sycophancy to the worst. He said that if you're not in ZANU-PF, you're not likely to get into heaven. And when you die and go to heaven, you shouldn't be surprised to see Mugabe standing there next to God, deciding who comes in to heaven or out of heaven.
I think some people would try to kill themselves again if that was the situation.
Yeah, I would definitely go to hell if that was the case.
Like, imagine you get there, literally.
You'd be guaranteed in heaven, but when you're not my kids, you'd be guaranteed good.
Ah, wow. I mean, yeah, no. But
I think, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no. So ZANU-PF has definitely started campaigning. It's no joke. They're going to hit all 10 provinces. This is the first one. And really, they are going for the youth. They are, because, you know, we've discussed these things. Virgin voters are going to definitely take up a larger proportion, and the youth really are a key constituency in the next election. And aside from all the sycophancy that was taking place, the president did make some very interesting statements relating to issues that I suppose affect a large proportion of their constituency. One of them was that there needs to be a review of the land reform, in the sense that when they parceled out A2 farms, they were too big for quite a lot of people. And he says they're definitely going to relook at the situation and redistribute or resize some of those farms. So if, you know, some of the people who got A2s who really are using 10 hectares, even 150 hectares, they could find themselves, you know, with a much smaller portion of those farms, which I think is a good thing. We need to increase productivity. We need to stop wasting land, basically. And there's a lot of people who got farms who are wasting land. Okay, there's some sort of interference. Okay.
Well, cool. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. So we need to fix that situation. That's a situation that I hope they look at seriously and they're able to fix. Especially people who got inputs under command or under the presidential input scheme and have not performed. Those people really, really, really have no excuses, or little excuses, because one of the excuses was atinama inputs and all sorts of things. There are people who were given inputs. They need, at the end of the farming season, which, you know, vanhu tanga kukohwa izvezvi. So at the end of that, there needs to be an audit of some sort and see who performed, who didn't perform, and why didn't they perform.
Yeah, I think those are very fair points. The opposition has been calling for a land audit since the land reform happened. But of course, you know, once it's a ZANU-PF project, it's people are going to forget that clearly, like the same way with the land reform. But yeah, land audit is necessary. And what it is, though, is that I think that while we can see what ZANU-PF is doing, I would like to, for anyone that's listening, I think they should realize that, you know, Chipanga and his statements doesn't represent the best that the youth can give. And I think that even for ZANU-PF, I'm sure that they're more capable people within ZANU-PF. I don't think he's representative of even, you know, the crop of the ZANU-PF school of thought in terms of his own intellectual capacity and his reasoning abilities. I think that he's there because he's malleable, and, you know, also maybe he's really good at organizing people. He seems to be effective at bringing people together, but I don't think that we should, you know, let him be a representation of what this generation can really offer. So for me, that's one of the big things that I think that the opposition is going to have to provide a counterpoint for that, because I think that's where the real fight, the ideological fight is. And what's worrying is that while you can see Chipanga is what, he's 24, 25.
He's not. He's in his 30s. Lies. Lies.
So what, who said he was 25?
There's no way he's 25. Please, let's not lie to each other.
Is he like AC, who lies about his age? Because AC has been 26 for 6 years now.
AC is 29. Akataura 28. I mean,
Go. Listen to his last three. I don't know why we just threw him under the bus.
I don't know. No, that was you. That was all you. AC said he's 28 or 29. I don't know. Iwewe wakuti 26 for the last 3 years. Aunyari. But Chipanga's not 24. That I refuse. There's no way. Come on. Honestly.
I can't find any data on him. But anyway, look, what I'm saying is that he's younger than Chamisa.
Oh yeah.
And he's more genuinely a youth than any of the opposition leaders have right now. So it's ironic that ZANU-PF actually has a genuine youth in their campaign efforts as opposed to the opposition who haven't put forward any youthful figures on the national stage since Chamisa. Or since maybe Solomon Mazore Promise Makawananzi is not really in MDC anymore, but Las Manengayama is in jail. So I guess that's the last crop of Promise and Solomon Mazore and Las Manengayama are the last real MDC youth to come up, and they're all in their 30s now.
Yeah, that's actually quite interesting. We do have an absence of people with between the age of 20 and 33 in the political space, in any political party, save for AC, save for Viva, but you know, that's just AC. To be fair, that's just AC.
Yeah.
So we need to get No, Casey, yes, I don't know when this was done, but I found something. It says I was born 32 years ago, so there's no way he's 24. I don't have a date. In 2014.
So he's no longer a youth by 24. He's even still a youth.
He was at the Border Gezi Training Center. So in 2014, if he was, he's 35 this year. So he's, you know, just on the
border. Next year, he won't be a youth.
Yeah, next year he won't be a youth. But you'll still be the youth leader. You know how.
I suppose you guys at ZANU-PF had Sikosi Ondrov, or whatever his name was, 60 years old, was in charge of the youth.
Absalom Sikosi.
Absalom was 60 years old and was youth secretary. So Apanachi no Chamisa.
You're right though about having more youth leaders, and I think it's really it's part of the reason why young people don't participate, because there's really nobody that you can relate to in these political power structures, and they don't make an effort as well. It's a catch 22 where you want young people to participate, and we really should go out and participate. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that is enticing or nothing that is beneficial. So when I look at the situation and I'm saying, to join in ZANU-PF youth structures, for example, what am I really going there to do? I'm not an individual who wants to be a sycophant and be, you know, literally worshipping individuals. That's not my style. If it is, hey, go ahead, do your thing. I want to discuss ideas, but then when you start to engage some of the people, you realize that all they can do is be praise singers. So, you know, I don't know if the space is... Wow, okay, there's a lot of interference.
Yeah, I can hear you, though.
Okay, cool. I don't know if the space is going to be accommodating to young people, but at the end of the day, maybe, you know what, we just create our own space. Screw the mainstream political parties. Let's just, you know, psych ourselves up. I said, you know, AC has been saying it to his credit. Just get in there. Let's have young people excited about participating, even as independents or however it is. But just find a way to plug into the space.
I think this podcast, Ruyan, will show the guys, the this flag guys, Zimbabwe Zoka. If you go on into different areas, there's so many examples of young people who are sort of just making things work with the resources that we afforded, without necessarily being plugged into the structures or the existing structures of the mainstream. What I think that's, you know, a lot of us, we are not built, or we are not ready yet to do it, like, for example, door to door knocking, or to stand at the corner handing out flyers. I don't think we're ready for that kind of, I mean, I'm talking about the general demographics of people that listen to this podcast, and perhaps even for myself. I think that the mental leap, I've only gotten to the point just recently where I genuinely believe it's time for me to be standing on the side of the road with flyers, or posting flyers up, or those kind of things, and putting in some of the actual hard yards and work that other people in ZANU-PF would be willing to do for lunch at the end of the day, or, you know, kutenga wasadza, you know. So I think that's where we're at a disadvantage, is because we're not really ready to do some of the actual work of sleeping in the back of the car for 3 or 4 days, which campaigner, because we are used to a certain level of nice things, I guess.
I wonder how other people, or other young people around the world, are doing things, and maybe that's something to look at and to research about, because you know, we say that young people are disinterested. I think it's a global phenomenon as well, to a degree. I think, you know, you might have more young people interested in other places than here, and vice versa. But I wonder what sort of models they use, those that are involved and those that are interested, when it comes to campaigning, when it comes to getting themselves elected, when it comes to political advocacy and that sort of thing. Because I am harsh on us, and for good reason, but I also think that, you know, maybe it's a global issue. It can be a global issue, and maybe there are things that other people are doing elsewhere that could benefit us here and that we can learn from. So I think that's something. If anybody knows, anybody listening, anybody has ideas, do share, hit us up, you know, Facebook, Twitter, wherever, and let's get this conversation going. Because come 2018, even if, you know, none of the presidential candidates are appealing, there could be an MP or a an MP or a councillor that, you know, you could actually just get behind and support, and maybe this person gets elected, and then you start building there for the next one in 2023 or whatever it is. And it's a long process. I think sometimes we forget that we are young and we want instant results and instant change.
That's something that Shingi Mutas always speaks about, is how we are so impatient for change, want everything to happen right now.
Yeah, so I don't know. We'll definitely have to see. Interestingly enough, speaking about elections, ZEC has decided on who will be providing the BVR kits. It's the Laxton Group company from China,
China?
Yeah.
I predicted it I should have taken bets.
I mean,
I said that.
But listen, it's a company from China and a company from Germany. I mean,
I was reading the article of they said they've requested, they'd initially requested 1,100 kits, they've now requested 3,000 kits with 200 regular ones, and then the 100 being district level kits, which sort of works out to, and I haven't done the maths, I definitely would want to do more research into this, but it sort of works out with, there's 210 constituencies in the country, so at 14 BVR kits a constituency, if they're going to deploy them all at the same time and throughout the whole country, which surprisingly for me sounds fair. I mean, I don't know how the voter registration process will be held, but I sort of believe if you have 14 kids that are moving ward to ward, neighborhood to neighborhood over a period of 4 months or 5 months, you should be able to get everyone registered quite easily. But I also, you maybe have seen how they work and what the average time of registering a person is, but it seems that that's a fair number. I mean, it's obviously on the low end, and but we have to be realistic with the amount of resources that they've got. But if they can get 3,000 of these kits and have 4 or 5 months to do it, I think they should be able to register a large proportion of the country. I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I think so. I think, in all fairness, I think ZEC is trying. They are not a perfect institution, and they have, you know, many flaws. But with regards to this BVR process, they've actually been putting in quite a lot of effort, and credit to my Makara, who's been, you know, running this process, is that in face of the government trying to angle for this not to take place, she's stood her ground on this issue of BVR, that's the registration, and it's definitely overdue, but it seems that we are getting somewhere. It's not like the process is being unnecessarily stalled. So I do think, like you said, 3,000 kids, I think that should be enough, especially if there is, and I'm sure they'll work out a systematic way of going each ward and that sort of thing. I'm not sure when the voter registration is going to start, but I would advise everyone who is eligible to vote to register. You don't even have to have a candidate who you want to vote for. That can come later. That's not even a factor. But at least right now, make sure you are registered so that you have the choice to vote on the day. You might not want to do it on the day, and that's totally up to you. You know, you're not forced to vote for anyone. But at least allow yourself to have the choice to vote. That's why it's important to have us registered, everyone registered. If you don't want to vote, which I hope doesn't come to that, you know, you don't have to, but make sure that you have a voter registration card.
Go register to vote. If you don't want to vote, go on, right, you know, vote for Veda or Mr. Bean, or write Matakwa Maiwako. You want to write on, spoil your vote. It's better for your vote, because I think people don't realize that spoiled votes are counted. And what spoiled vote means is that, especially in Western elections, but I think it would be the same. If you have a large proportion of spoiled votes, it's actually a vote against the system. Example where you'll see in the British election that's coming up, for anyone that's interested, have a look at when they're announcing the results, and they start analyzing and they speak about how many votes were spoiled. Because what spoiled votes essentially mean is that people didn't want to vote for either of the candidates. They use their vote as a protest. So if you really don't have anyone to vote for, even spoiling your vote is actually still exercising your democratic right to vote, because it's registering in even a small way that you're unhappy with the system. So if you have a situation where there's a large percentage of spoiled votes, people can take that information and understand that this election was not popular, or that there's something wrong with the systems. Voting and registering is absolutely crucial. And, you know, we're always being accused of speaking about the problem and like that, and not speaking about solutions. But, you know, for me, very often it's quite self-evident. Just be active, register to vote when the time comes. You know, if you have a spare time, try and harass your counselor, go to a town meeting, you know, find some way to insert yourself into some civic, you know, society organizations or anything like that. I think that a lot of people are looking to politicians to provide some sort of solutions, but, you know, they might have ideas, but they're not going to have any solutions. And if you're sitting there at home, or you're sitting here, they're listening to us in this podcast and what's going on in the country without some sort of desire to get actively involved in whatever way, then I don't think that the change you want in Zimbabwe is going to happen, or the change in the government, or the change in ZANU, or the change in your circumstances are going to happen, because change isn't an event, it's a process. And we really have to be part of that process.
And on that bombshell, ding, ding, ding.
I think that's trademarks, okay?
okay, well, I don't know. So, I don't know. My bad.
Soon you'll be calling out the stick.
We should get one. But yeah. Anyway, I think that's a good place for us to end. As soon as they announce the dates, we'll announce them as well for everyone listening, and then you can find out. We'll even try do a
proper... I'll be hosting voter registration parties. I think that's actually something I'm going to do. Bring your own nyama, bring your own booze. We'll go to the polling station, register.
Yeah, that can work. Or you have a shipment and you say you can't, like you book a heavy artist and you say you can't get in unless you bring your voter registration card.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, we'll
hey, go, don't
we'll
let's not give these ideas away. On what are you doing? This is sheets.
Yeah, actually, no. Let's get off the air now.
we can discuss in private. Anyway, thanks for listening.
Capital 263.
Free to say it and free to do it.
And now. Capital 263.